Welcome on to a Sunday night edition of the Dunked On Basketball Podcast. Had a somewhat busy weekend as the rumors are now flying with regard to the offseason, opt-ins, opt-outs, starting to get a few trade rumors, and also we're going to talk tonight about the offseason cap situations for the Atlanta Hawks and Cleveland Cavaliers. Joining me to do that is Pro Basketball Talk, NBC Sports, Dan Feldman. What's up, Dan?
Hey, how are you doing?
And first, I must bore you with a mea culpa from our previous episode. Danny and I actually got two things wrong. It's been edited to reflect that, but for those who listened and didn't and heard the original version, for Golden State, number one, David Lee cannot be stretched because his contract, I think the only one that still remains from the previous CBA, only new CBA contracts can be stretched. That's contracts beginning in the 2011-2012 season can be stretched, so Lee cannot be stretched. And the other one is that second-round picks cannot get a maximum qualifying offer. The language in the CBA says that you can only do it if you're coming off a rookie-scale contract, and only first-round picks get those. So a second-round pick, Chris Middleton, Draymond Green, cannot receive a maximum qualifying offer, so they will have the ability to go out in the market and get that two-year deal with a third-year player option if they can find someone to give that to him. So that's cleaning up a little bit. Talking about the CBA for hours can be pretty complex, and sometimes we might make some mistakes, so we'll do our best to correct them. And now that I've bored Dan to death, not really because he loves this stuff, what's going on, man? This news out of Cleveland that they might be trying to add even more salary by using that Haywood non-guaranteed contract is pretty remarkable.
You know, obviously that's why they had Haywood, to have this option. I really just expected all along they'd very quietly be like, oh, we couldn't find a good offer. There was nothing out there so they could save this money or at least not spend this extra money. But the fact that they... I'm assuming it came from them. They leaked it out that they're going to be aggressive looking for somebody. Dan Gilbert's opening the pocketbooks.
It really is pretty remarkable, and we'll get into the nitty-gritty details a little bit after we go through the rest of the news. But basically, where they're going to be at in a luxury tax situation, you're going to have to pay, you know, if you get someone with Haywood's contract, that's about $10 million, give or take, for the salary matching. So you got to pay that $10 million, and then you might be paying anywhere from $30 to $50 million in extra luxury tax on top of that as well. So I don't know who you're going to entice with that 30th pick, or I'm sorry, not 30th pick, their first-round pick, that they want to attach to that contract to get someone. But, man, is that guy going to help $60 million worth on what's already a loaded roster? If it were my money and I were the owner, I'd have a pretty hard time doing that. But Dan Gilbert seems to be all in, and LeBron James' free agency, the way he has set up his contracts, also seems to be encouraging Dan Gilbert to be all in.
Yeah, it's so tough to predict where Cleveland's going to go, because usually when we do this type of analysis, it's, well, what can the team do under the rules? Here it's really just, what does Dan Gilbert want to spend? Is that guy going to be worth $50 million? I'm making air quotes, and I realize now that nobody else can see me do that. Is he going to be worth, air quotes, $50 million? I mean, not how we'd look at it, but this is their only way to get another good player. If they don't do it this way, they just don't have that good player. Maybe that is worth it to Dan Gilbert to make the team better, to make LeBron happier. But it's all in his hands. It's all what he wants to spend.
All right, well, why don't we get to the news here, and we'll get back to Cleveland in a moment. So we'll kind of run through these rapid fire. One is that it's been reported that Jordan Hill's player option with the Lakers for about $9 million will not be picked up. No big surprise there, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, they had to do it. I don't know if the Lakers just don't understand the salary cap well enough, or if Jordan Hill's agent really pushed for it last year. That should have been a non-guaranteed deal, so the Lakers would have a little more flexibility with it. But the way it stood, they had to decline that.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine just that Jordan Hill is someone who could have signed a longer contract last year, and the selling point probably was, we're going to pay you more, and then we're not going to have you locked up. Because that really can mess things up for a player if he's stuck in a non-guaranteed deal and then gets let go after all the money is already spent up around the league. So good job by his agent at least making that a team option that has to be decided before we get into the new league year on July 1st. But, yeah, they can clearly do better in free agency with that $9 million than they can spending it on him.
Definitely.
Taj Gibson had ankle surgery about a month after the season, has long struggled with ankle injuries, had three or four pretty bad sprains throughout the year, missed some time, did not look to be himself in a number of respects as the season went on. And so that surgery is basically just to repair that ligament on the outside of his left ankle. And, you know, 4 months or so, they're talking about recovery time. That'll put him into training camp. We'll see now whether he can get back to being the player that he was 2 years ago, or whether now, as he nears age 30, this is going to mark a new kind of decline level in performance for him.
Well, it's going to be a tough year for him. You know, as soon as he gets back, Tom Thibodeau's just going to be playing him huge minutes and just taxing him and not giving him any games off. You know, if only there was something the Bulls could do about that situation.
Okay, a couple more here. Some interesting news reported by Woj that Sergio Rodriguez, fans might remember him from his days in Portland as a nice alley-oop combination with Rui Fernandez. They now actually have played for Real Madrid in Spain. Been a very good EuroLeague team the last couple of years. Probably a team, actually, that's a little bit better than some bottom-rung NBA teams, frankly, these last couple of years. And now Sergio is now 29. Has been maybe the best point guard in Europe, really, certainly in the top two or three. And it's reported now that he doesn't have any buyout issues. He wants to come back. And he's someone who I think would make a really nice backup point guard for somebody. You know, it all just depends on what kind of price he's seeking. But, you know, $3 million, $4 million a year for him, I think would be a pretty solid deal, you know, as long as the years aren't too long for someone looking for a backup point guard.
That seems a little high to me. He's probably blossomed since he was in the NBA, but I never thought he was that good. It's a point guard heavy league. I would shoot to get him for a little less, but if at the right point in the market you don't have a backup point guard, I don't think that's a huge overpay or anything.
Yeah, he actually would be a pretty good choice, I think, in Cleveland with their mini mid-level potentially. He's someone who is always has had amazing passing vision, has improved his defense, and is shooting quite a bit since he's been at Real Madrid. I like him a little bit more than maybe you do, but and then also, you know, another guy too, 29-year-old, I think, Marcelino Huertas. Fans will remember him from some games. He's a point guard for Brazil that always plays Team USA tough. Another guy with great vision, probably not quite the player that Sergio is, not as good defensively or as a scorer, but a guy who's another pretty good pick-and-roll operator would make a nice backup point guard on a team that has some other good defenders on the perimeter as well. He's probably, I think, would be more of kind of a $2 million a year type of guy.
Yeah, he runs the pick-and-roll well. He knows when to give it up, when to keep it. In this league, the way the league's trending, that makes him a good fit on most teams. I don't love him either, but, yeah, you're looking for a little cheap depth. He's a solid option.
Yeah, and a lot of teams just can use someone to run the show who's a real good passer as backup point guard. I mean, both of those guys are beyond kind of the caretaker level. And we've seen some guys like, you know, Pablo Prigioni, for example, is a guy who was a relatively solid backup point guard, even at the age of 37. I think either of those guys are better than him right now. So, you know, guys like that that just know how to play, can pass, I think there's a place for them in the league. It's once you start getting them as a starter, they might be a little overextended defensively and from an athletic standpoint. I think they're good bench options and guys who can also kind of come in. If you have another good point guard who can play off the ball, they can play next to him and set that guy up.
One thing I like about guys like this is you can keep the same style. A lot of point guards in the backup point guards of the league right now are change of pace guys, and sometimes that's good. But with these guys, you can keep playing the way you want to play. They're not going to be as good as your starter, but you don't have to change how you play.
Next item, Paul Pierce opting out. Reports are he had a player option on his full mid-level deal that he signed with Washington. It was 2 years. He's going to opt out. A couple of questions. Number one, it's been reported that it's still going to be down to the Wizards or the Clippers for him. The Clippers can only offer their mini mid-level about $3.4 million. Do you see him opting out of $5 million to go play in L.A. for $3.4 million?
Well, he could give himself a slight raise with the Wizards. I think he could get 120% of his last salary if he re-signs. And so maybe he's just trying to use a little leverage. He's at the point in his career where I think he just wants to go where he wants to go. The Clippers have a need now with Matt Barnes in Charlotte. It'd be a really good fit. He's comfortable with Doc. Yeah, I could see him taking the location, the team, the coach over the money.
Yeah, he also seems like he's pretty happy in Washington, and maybe he's just going to say, all right, give me now the same deal, you know, except a raise of 20%, as you said, and now give me another year player option again for next year. You know, that could be it as well, and I think he has the leverage to ask for that. Washington, though, I think is going to be a little wary of going beyond that year because they have big plans in the summer of 2016, as everyone has long known that they want to try and get Durant to come home. So that could be a potential sticking point there if he asks for more years on that contract other than just one and getting the raise. So maybe that's how the Clippers can get him, is they go for more than 1 year and, you know, give him some more guaranteed money. And who knows how well he's going to age. But, I mean, I think he would be great for the Clippers. You know, they could play him at the four as Washington did, get some shooting going. They could really get an unstoppable offensive lineup if they played Griffin at center at times, or even DeAndre Jordan as well. So, yeah, he would be a great fit on the Clippers, a great value for anyone at $3.4 million. Still, he's still got it from three-point range with the shot making. So we'll see. I mean, maybe he ends up going somewhere else too. Maybe he could even make more than what they're talking about for Washington if he goes elsewhere.
Yeah, he had a nice, strong year. I didn't expect him to play as well as he did last year. He'll definitely have options.
So, on sad news, Joel Embiid, you know, there are reports that his foot was not healing as well as had been hoped. He now is to see three more specialists, and they hope to have an answer on whether what the course is going to be and whether he can continue kind of his rehab or what the story is going to be in a couple of weeks, you know, conveniently after the draft, I guess. So although I don't necessarily expect that Okafor is going to fall to them and make it an issue anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's no reason to panic yet, but there's still that concern until there's some type of news or conclusion about where his health is. You know, he hasn't played yet. That's scary.
All right, next, I agree with you there. Next item, Tom Benson, a New Orleans court found that he, the 87-year-old Benson, is still deemed competent. There had been some family struggles with his adopted daughter, who had long, Ms. LeBlanc, who long had been groomed to take over the Saints and Pelicans. Then they got kind of cut out, and his new wife, Gail, had been put into his will as the successor, and that triggered a lawsuit over Mr. Benson's competency, and a court found that he was competent, so he will remain in control of the Pelicans, and he also has kind of been linked to wanting Joe Dumars in there. Maybe we'll see, you know, that he now at least comes in some sort of an advisory role, although they have long denied that that's the case. But the rumblings that I heard out of there was kind of, while that thing was going on, there wasn't that much of an idea of who is really in charge. But they did manage to move on from Monty Williams and then also get a new coach, so maybe those rumblings were incorrect.
The one thing I got to, I don't know if a kick out of is the right word, because it seems like a sad situation that it got to this, and I don't know how it got to this level where it's in the courts to decide if he's competent. But the judge said, you know, I listened to his responses and I looked in his eyes and I could tell he was competent, and it reminded me of all this pre-draft analysis where general managers say, I interviewed this player and I looked into his eyes and I learned something about him. And I think a lot of that is some hogwash. Competent. There are ways to tell much better than looking into his eyes.
And I'm sure, and both sides had experts. I'm sure that there's, you know, plenty more to it than that that he was basing his opinion on. Then a couple items impacting the Heat. Goran Dragic, it is reported that they will offer him 5 years and over $80 million to start. That is not the maximum. He could make up to $109 million. if they offer him the maximum. And that will provide some savings for Miami. And as we've talked about on previous episodes, they're really going to be up against the tax. I would imagine that Dragic's representation is not going to be too happy with that initial offer, because if he went to the Knicks or he went to the Lakers, he could get a four-year offer for almost $85 million. So you're going to have to at least beat that, I would say, if you're the Heat, and you know, make the decision for him to stay a good one, where you say, all right, you're paying me more in the fifth year than I'm going to get elsewhere. And, you know, I think ultimately the Heat are going to have to cave and give it to him, because they traded all these assets to get him. They can't let him get away. And Pat Riley even said in his news conference that, like, if he doesn't re-sign, he's going to be sitting over there with you guys pointing to the reporters.
When they traded for him, there were so many reports that this was essentially coming with a promise of a max offer this offseason. And, you know, we obviously, at least I don't know what the Heat told him or, you know, what conditions there were. But I just wonder, with this type of offer, like, could you anger the guy if you promised him the max and now you're starting to screw around with it? You know, I don't know how he'll take that.
Yeah, I mean, they can't promise him anything, theoretically. That would be, you know, circumvention of the CBA to say, discuss a specific contract before you're allowed to.
Well, I think you could do something like, say, you know, we're trading for you with the intention that if you fit in, well, we'll offer you the max. So it's not a direct thing promising it, but saying...
Sure. No, and I'm not saying that, you know, there's no way that those conversations happened. I think they very likely did. But, I mean, I think what it's going to be is, hey, please take this. It would really help us out. And Goran Dragic is going to say, how's it going to help you out? Oh, it's going to save your owner some luxury tax money? No, give me the max, please. And I think that they will ultimately, if not cave, I mean, maybe what they might do is they start him, you know, at the max this year, or maybe they start him a little bit below the max and then no raise next year and then full raises the 2 years afterwards to kind of give him a little more breathing room in the summer of 2016. But I don't expect a significant discount there. Do you agree with me?
I do, and I think you hit the nail on the head with the fact that if this $80 million is exactly right as it's reported, that's, like you said, less than he could get over just 4 years elsewhere. So if you're willing to go up, you're messing around a little bit by going under what he could get elsewhere. He could take that, you know, on day one of free agency and get more than your last offer. I think he'd go back expecting Miami to counter, but maybe he doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, now keep in mind his brother is there as well. I think he fits in pretty well. They're a team that's going to have a chance to win, where if he goes elsewhere, it will not be a team that has a chance to win. So I do think that the non-money factors are certainly in favor of him staying, and maybe there's a slight discount for that. But, I mean, man, if they don't come up from there, they're going to be playing with fire for sure. So then more on the Heat. Mutual interest reported between the Lakers and Dwayne Wade. Yeah, okay.
The Lakers are going to get so many players paid because that's the credible threat. Because the Lakers are just crazy enough to give any, you know, you can believe that. If you're Miami, you've got to be scared that the Lakers are they might,
that's right.
I don't know,
yeah,
if
I mean,
dumb enough is the right word, but dumb enough to give Dwayne Wade a max contract for 4 or 5 years.
Well, and there's also some leverage for the player, too, because you can, oh, well, it's the Lakers, I could go there.
Yep.
Whereas, like, oh, I got the... So if Dwayne Wade's like, yeah, I got this max offer coming from you know, the Timberwolves. Oh, yeah, really? You're going to go play in Minnesota, you know, and win 20 games? Like, probably not. So, and then last one of these before we get into the Hawks and Cleveland. Aaron Aufalo expected to opt out of his last year of his contract, a player option for $7.75 million. You know, Wes Matthews rehabbing. Aufalo, however, was not good in Portland. They did give up a first rounder to get him from Denver. I mean, what do you think of him? I mean, is he even worth $7.75 million next year? You know, I'm not even sure that I would necessarily want to pay that if I were a GM.
Yeah, I think I would. And with Portland, even beyond Matthews, when he was there late in the season, there were guys in and out of the lineup with some other injuries. When they had everybody healthy minus Matthews, they were pretty good. So I think Aufalo got a little bit of a bad rap because he happened to be there when they were going through a lot of things, even in addition to Matthews. And that
and he played with a hurt shoulder in the playoffs, too. I mean, he tried Gamely to come back, had a horrendous playoffs, but, you know, I think that that was in large part due to the injury. But on the other hand, he's a guy who is kind of like a mini Jeff Green in the sense that the advanced stats have never really liked him as much as you would think, you know, in terms of his defense and the fact that, you know, he shoots okay from three-point range, but he also insists on taking a lot of long twos. So a guy who maybe isn't as good as his traditional stats would indicate. So we'll see what ends up happening there. I mean, I think, you know, it's probably the right decision to opt out. But there are a lot of wings on the market. But given his age, getting up there close to 30, probably a good time to lock in another long-term deal rather than waiting.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a good move on his part. He'll find some team willing to pay him that much at the start of a long-term deal or more.
Okay. Well, so let's talk about Cleveland now. I mean, there was the report that they might try and move the Haywood contract. Let's talk about what – well, let's see. All right, why don't we run down their list of just their salaries and who's on the team, who's a free agent first, and then let's talk about kind of what they need, assuming that most of those guys come back. So let's give us a rundown of what their salaries are, at least the guys who are coming back, and then who's a free agent.
Sure. So coming back, just – set guaranteed salary, Anderson Varejao at about $9.6 million. Kyrie signed that max contract extension. It's projected to start at about $15.9 million. Mozgov has a team option for just under $5 million. That's a lock. They'll pick that up. Mike Miller has a player option for about $2.9 million. Has he already exercised that? if he hasn't, he will soon.
Yeah, and it's pretty hard. People are talking about maybe he'll retire. Well, he's got 2.8 million reasons not to do that. So I agree with you. He'll be back.
And then the last one locked in is Joe Harris on a minimum deal for a second-year player.
Yeah, so that leaves a lot of free agents. Potential free agents.
I think they'll all hit free agency.
Yeah, I mean, so LeBron James has a player option. Kevin Love. Both of those guys, if they opt out and just re-sign even a one-year deal with a second-year player option, can get paid more than they could on their existing deal. Then you got J.R. Smith, a free agent, Tristan Thompson, restricted free agent, Amon Shumpert, restricted free agent, and Matthew Dellavedova, restricted free agent.
Right.
So let's say that just theoretically, they bring all those guys back, and we'll get into what the cost of that will be in a second. What do you think this team needs then? I mean, they're pretty stacked at that point.
They are, and a lot of the question marks are guys who stepped up and got good experience during this playoff run after their injuries. So I think they're going to come back very strong next year. I think they could use an upgrade at backup point guard, and on the wing, somebody who's a little bit of a better creator than J.R. Smith and Amon Shumpert. Just to give them another look, especially when LeBron is sitting.
Yeah, I mean, I think they could use even another kind of 3-and-D type of wing, because Shumpert's a little bit more D and Smith is a little bit more 3 than you might like there, ideally. But I think, yeah, their number one need is another guy who can create a backup point guard. Kyrie's going to be coming off this injury. They're probably going to try and play him really low minutes. I mean, especially with all the injuries that they had in the playoffs, especially since Kyrie struggled with that tendonitis, which is an overuse injury, I expect them to play him very few minutes throughout the year. So they're going to need a guy who can actually create off the dribble, run a pick and roll on the backside at a minimum. I think that's their number one goal, and that was what's been reported by Windhorst as kind of what they're looking for with that Haywood non-guaranteed contract. So that's another one, too, that should explain then how that Haywood contract works and how that might be used to get another player.
So Haywood, correct me if I'm wrong on this, he was amnestied, and then was he claimed on amnesty waivers, right?
Yes.
And claimed on amnesty waivers. So what that means is another team said, we're going to pay a small amount of his salary to get him, and his original team was on the hook. The exception is the final year of his contract, which is completely unguaranteed, basically because there's no point of amnestying an unguaranteed contract. You could just waive the player. His salary doesn't go down. It stays at the high original amount it would have been, which is about $10.5 million. So the Cavaliers can trade that $10.5 million salary for next season to another team that is a player they want to get rid of, or maybe there's a draft pick attached, and that other team can waive Haywood immediately by the end of July, not pay anything. So it's a good way for another team to offload salary and for the Cavaliers to increase their luxury tax bill even more.
Yeah, and they'll be able to, since they will be in the tax, they can get salary coming back for up to 125% of Haywood's contract, so basically up to, you know, almost $13 million or so in salary coming back should they choose to do that. But I think, you know, there is not really around the league that much in terms of totally just dead salary. I mean, really, David Lee is probably the only guy that you look at as just being a totally terrible contract. The only other one would be Gerald Wallace. Neither of those guys will help Cleveland at all. So what they're going to have to do, I think, is entice teams through draft pick incentive. They're going to have their draft pick. What's their draft pick this year? It's like 23, is that right?
I think it's 24.
Okay, so anyway, in the mid-20s, do you think that that is enough to entice a team to give back a player who's really going to help them next year?
Yeah, I do. But if I were Cleveland, and obviously I don't know what trades they have available, what other teams would accept, but I'd be a little more interested in targeting, looking not to trade that draft pick, at least in this deal, just because the type of player I think you're going to get, we're talking more about a backup. If you aim too high, you're going to get somebody you either have to put in the starting lineup, and oftentimes, and some of the players we'll talk about, are guys more comfortable with the ball in their hands. And when you have Kevin Love and Kyrie and LeBron in the starting lineup, that's not what you want. And then, is that guy going to be happy off the bench? Is he going to be a problem because he's coming off the bench? So I think I would aim a little bit lower and not necessarily give up that draft pick with this.
All right, so you... Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, with this move, you can always trade that draft pick later for something else, or if, you know, I'm not opposed to it, if a good player comes up, but I just think it's more likely the best deal for Cleveland is just going to be Haywood or maybe a second rounder or maybe certain protections on a future draft pick. But just to give up this number 24 pick, not going to rush to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I would understand maybe the reason to do that because, number one, whoever that is isn't going to play at all for you next year and probably not the year after that either, assuming this whole team comes back. And another reason you might do it is, well, if you want to pick someone up, you know, using a future draft pick later or whoever you select with it, number one, whoever you selected might not be the whoever that team wants. And number two, you may have a little trouble matching salary. This way, at least, you can just absorb that salary back into the $10 million that's vacated by Haywood. So I actually think that I would include that pick. And, you know, if you have too much talent, well, with all the injuries they had this year, I think that they're probably feeling a little burned by that right now. And especially with Kyrie playing so little, you know, it's probably, I think they might feel okay about that. I mean, they really have no one else on this team besides Kyrie and LeBron who can do anything whatsoever off the dribble. So I don't think it's that much of an issue if you need someone with the ball in their hands. But to that end, you put together a nice list of some potential guys that they might be able to get, whether including that draft pick or not, for the Haywood contract that teams might be willing to move on from.
Yeah, so I'll go through a few of these. Atlanta, you know, this is more of an aiming low move, but maybe with Atlanta with Shelvin Mack, and we'll get into more of the Hawks later, including why they might want to trade Shelvin Mack. But Shelvin Mack could be a guy who could play either guard spot off the bench and give you a little depth there. With the Cavs, it's always tough to talk about what moves they can make because I don't know what LeBron will allow. Like, is it okay to trade Varejao, or is he too close of friends with LeBron? If they can't...
Yeah, getting rid of Varejao, he signed this extension, basically, and then tore his Achilles shortly after. He's basically $10 million for the next 2 years guaranteed, so approximately. So that's definitely a really bad contract, but we hear the way LeBron talked about it in the press conference of, oh, we're missing, you know, our center, who's like really our heartbeat, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I don't think that they would be too interested in moving on from Varejao at this point.
If LeBron would allow it, maybe a guy you could look at is Deron Williams and combine Varejao and Haywood. And, you know, yes, Varejao is a bad contract. Deron Williams is a worse contract, though.
Oh, sure.
But he'd be, you know, maybe in limited minutes, you're not going to overextend him. Maybe he'd be just an excellent backup point guard. Maybe at this stage in his career, he'd be okay with it. I mean, he's kind of in a rut in Brooklyn. I don't know. It's the type of thing I'd look at. And maybe even the Nets would throw in a pick, and that's something you could use down the road to upgrade your roster once you can identify maybe what other holes emerge throughout the season. Another guy in the Nets you could look at is Jarrett Jack. He makes a little bit less than Haywood, but they have some low-end salaries they could pitch in.
Sure.
In Detroit, Brandon Jennings has lost his job to Reggie Jackson. Maybe the Pistons would just rather have that cap room now and not worry about Jennings getting healthy and then trying to trade him for something positive midseason. Because I think the alternative is, if the Pistons can't trade him midseason, I think the alternative is just to let him walk after the year anyway. Now you have cap space early. One I do like is with the Heat. Maybe they put together a package of Mario Chalmers, Chris Anderson, and Shabazz Napier. Chris Anderson's sort of the penalty. He's going to make $5 million next year.
Yeah, I mean, to me, though, that one's no good to me, and I don't think Mac is either, if you'll brook my disagreement here, because none of those guys can do anything penetrating off the dribble. Like, that's what they need, is someone who can score, you know, someone who's not quite a supplementary player. I think if you get those guys, you get Mac, I mean, you're right back where you started in these finals when you just had a bunch of dudes who can't do anything except shoot open threes.
Well, except for next year, I think you can bank on having, maybe not bank on, but at least hope you have Kyrie and Love. I think the difference is you're building a little bit more toward having a strong regular season throughout. I'm thinking more of which guys are going to fit best in the playoffs. And in the regular season, you know, I wouldn't mind going through Kevin Love more. If you need to limit Kyrie's minutes and LeBron's minutes, you know, go through Love more, and these complimentary guys could fit okay around Love.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm basing it more on, well, I think they could use that in the regular season, obviously, with Kyrie playing less, but also I think that I'm basing it on just what they said they wanted. So, and might be a little more realistic in that sense. I did like your Kevin Martin one. I thought it was a pretty decent choice. He has, what, 2 years left at around $7.5 million. At this point,
yeah. See, this is where, you know, I think he's a viable candidate and somebody they should look at. I don't think he's the best fit. I think he needs the ball a little too much. I don't know how well he'd play with Kyrie and LeBron. He'd be okay, you know. If that's the best you can do, you know, this is sort of a use it or lose it option with Haywood's contract. So if that's what it is, that might make sense. One I think that could make a lot of sense is Jose Calderon. The Knicks want extra cap space. He's on the books, I think, for about $7.4 million next year. You know, he could be a guy off the bench who keeps the ball moving, makes those pinpoint passes. And no, he's not going to get to the rim, but his passing ability can, in some ways, duplicate a lot of the looks you're going to get by somebody who's going to get to the rim.
Yeah, or you just sign Sergio Rodriguez with the mini mid-level, and you get probably a better player than Jose, especially defensively. But I think the biggest theme that I'm getting here, though, I mean, anyone listening to the show, none of these names are too sexy here, are they?
No, they're not. I don't, like you said, there aren't like so many terrible contracts in the league anymore. The new collective bargaining agreement, if we can still call it the new one, deals are shorter. You know, there just aren't these like good players on awful contracts.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, and I'll tell you what, if I had to pay between $30 and $50 million for the privilege of getting some of these names on my team, I'm not too interested. I mean, maybe this is something that Gilbert feels the need to do to impress LeBron with his commitment, or you know, maybe they're just so scarred by what happened with Curry. But I mean, I think if you just use the mini mid-level, you might be able to get a guy, especially since, you know, you're close to a championship level team, who would just want to come and play there and build up his name and, you know, hope that you can just find someone better. So, I mean, I think that's if they do that, I mean, reports are that they will. You know, if it were my money, I'm trying to pretend really hard, really, really hard that I have as much money as Dan Gilbert right now. But I don't think that it's really hard to justify spending that in a pure basketball sense.
Well, it's not... One, it's not an either-or thing. They could make this trade and still use the mini mid-level to get even deeper.
So you're mentioning deeper. Why don't we go through, like, some of the scenarios now, like, assuming that people re-sign here. Let's talk about the restricted guys first. Tristan Thompson, what do you think he ends up re-signing for. I mean, I had him down on a sheet that I did just as sort of a test case as about $14 million. You think that that's realistic for where he ends up as a starting salary?
I do. I mean, when I was just sort of going over a rough idea, I just slotted in the max. And maybe it'll be a little less than that. But his agent is LeBron's agent. I think that matters a ton. He turned down 4 years and $54 million before the season, reportedly. And, you know,
was it that much? Huh? Yeah, I guess you would have to say he's certainly be asking for the max. And he had a playoffs where, you know, with the cap going up, especially, that probably looks like a relatively fair contract, because that won't be anywhere close to the max in 2016. The max for him would be almost $19 million in 2016. So if he starts off at 15, you know, that's almost like the equivalent of making 11 or 12 in this environment now.
Right. I mean, just because of the relationship that he has with LeBron and Rich Paul and they have with the Cavaliers, I thought he was trending toward a max even before the playoffs. To me, the playoffs just make it so the Cavaliers don't have to be too embarrassed by doing it.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, between 14 million, a conservative estimate, maybe up to the 15.9 million max. How about Iman Shumpert?
You know,
what do you think that they, you know, restricted free agent, 3-and-D guy, had a rough playoffs, but, you know, injured his groin, injured his shoulder, was very good in the Chicago series, and even I think in the Atlanta series, but then was totally ineffective against Golden State, as a lot of people are against that defense, frankly, and had that shoulder injury. But he's got some skills. He can hit a three, you know, attack the basket a little bit, and a very good defender, especially on point guards, which is necessary playing across from Kyrie. I think it's pretty imperative that they re-sign him. Would you agree with that?
Imperative might be a little strong. But for everything we've been talking about, you know, this is going to sound a little silly. It's just money. Like, whatever they spend, they're going to have the same flexibility regardless. Like, they're not going to get under the cap. It'd probably take a super effort even to get below the tax. So they're going to have the same flexibility. So it's what Gilbert wants to spend. We actually had the exact same number written down independently, a starting salary of about $7 million.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, but that'll probably be, what, a four-year deal, maybe even a five-year deal for him. And he might want more than that if it's going to be shorter. So that's something to consider. And I do think it's imperative. Like, I stick by that word because – who else do they have who can play any defense on the perimeter besides him? Like, they played such good D in these playoffs. He was a huge, huge part of that. They shut down Klay Thompson. So if they lose him, they're not going to be able to bring in anybody nearly as good as him. So they have to pay him. You know, and if he gets an offer sheet somewhere else, that offer sheet's going to be calculated to get him away. So I think that they have to bring him back, and that's going to give him some more leverage, maybe $7 million even. I mean, I think that might even be on the low end, ultimately.
Well, the reason I say it's not imperative is because, let's say, ignore the Haywood contract for a second. If they just bring everybody back, I think they're the favorites for next season. So if they lost Shumpert somehow, if, you know, Gilbert just says it's too expensive, they could use the Haywood contract to maybe target that type of wing defender. And, you know, the names we talked about weren't those guys, because we both think they're going to bring back Shumpert. But if they needed to use that Haywood contract, they could. And I think Dellavedova would be a fine backup point guard. And maybe you use the mini mid-level to look into another backup point guard to compete with Dellavedova.
Yeah, maybe that's so. But again, I think that Shumpert is someone that they need, and you certainly would rather pay, I would much rather pay him a couple million more than use the Haywood contract to acquire some of the guys that we were talking about. So
I'd agree with that, too.
And anyone who's actually as good as Shumpert, their draft pick's not going to be enough to entice someone to part with someone on a fair contract who's a good 3-and-D guy either. Like, that's part of the reason that you can use that Haywood contract and only use a pretty low draft pick, is because the guy is probably a little overpaid.
Yep, I'm with you on that.
Dellavedova, I had written down about $3 million. What do you think for him?
So his qualifying offer is about $1.15 million, and I just sort of left that there. I think that's about what he'll get. Maybe he could get more somewhere else if he really pushed it. Maybe, but I think he's right about there. $3 million sounds a little generous to me. He played, I think, over his head late in the postseason, but maybe he gets that J.J. Barea contract offer.
Yeah, and I mean, he hustles so much. His stats, you know, don't show how good a player he is. I mean, I think there are people who will buy into that. I agree with you. I'm not even sure, frankly, that I would feel good about him as my only backup point guard solution when you need a backup point guard who can play big minutes, as we discussed. He's just not a good enough creator. I mean, he had under a 10 PER on the year. I don't care how good a defense you're playing. If you are a point guard, you are not a valuable player with those kind of statistics over the course of the year. And I think he's someone who is largely could be exposed if he's going to play more minutes. I mean, yeah, he was good at annoying people in the playoffs, but, you know, certainly he was a big part of the problem against Golden State in the finals, why they couldn't score to save their lives. So I think that if it gets up to really anything above $3 million, which it could, or maybe even anything above $2 million, they can just do better finding someone, an outside solution.
Well, like, I love him as a third point guard. And again, this just comes down to what Dan Gilbert wants to spend, you know.
Yeah.
You have a little more depth behind it. And you know what? If you bring in somebody who's similar with the mini mid-level or somebody acquired in part with the Haywood contract or however you get somebody else and let them compete, like, that's going to bring out the best in both of them. And then you know you're whoever wins that job, it's a little safer. You're getting good production.
Yeah, and let's keep in mind, too, that really, you know, when you're looking at the tax, you're getting another, like, $1.50 for $5 million at the low end, $3.75, $4.25, $4.75 per dollar at the high end. So it's just crazy how much money, even getting a guy for $3 million, that's $10 million or more that you're spending on that guy. So, I mean, when you're that high into the tax, you get a guy in a 10-day contract that's like $250,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It gets very, very expensive.
So, all right, any other – those are all the restricted guys. J.R. Smith reportedly going to decline his option. What do you think he gets? I think he's right around the 6.5 that he would have been scheduled to make. Had he kept it, but maybe taxed another couple of years on.
Yep, I'm 100% with you. I just left in his player option salary when doing these estimates because I think he'll get about the same, but he'll lock in long-term before he's too old, and he'll do it now while he's playing with LeBron and LeBron loves him. The Cavs will pay for that.
Yeah, so let's say now that they all those things happen, right? And then they use the mini mid-level. Dellavedova gets his $3 million. You're going to get some minimum contracts in there, too. Then you're going to be about $40 million or so over the tax, assuming they also use the Haywood contract. So that is a crazy amount. If you're $40 million over the tax, that puts you really over $100 million in luxury tax payment as well on top of a salary that's over $100 million. So over a $200 million payroll, that would be like a league record. And it's not totally unrealistic. It's all just a question, as we've been saying, of how much Gilbert wants to pay. But it's kind of funny. I mean, I don't think they're going to lose any of these guys. You know, Love has said he's coming back. Now, if he leaves, that's obviously a huge difference. Let me ask you this now. You're Kevin Love's agent. I assume you're going to opt out, as, you know, anyone would. What do you want? Let's say Cleveland offers you a 5-year max deal. You've had some health problems. You know, do you want to take that? That starts at around $18.9 million. You get the 7.5% annual raises. So it gets up to about a $109 million contract. Or are you going to say, no, I want a one-year deal with a second-year player option so I can be a free agent again in 2016, and then I can start my next contract at $25 million instead of $18 million. Which of those are you picking?
I'm taking the 1+1 right now and locking in later. So just to run through real quick what those max contracts would be, staying and leaving in 2015 or 2016. This summer, if he signs a max with Cleveland, it'd be, like you said, $109 million. If he goes somewhere else, it's $81 million. In 2016, if he re-signs, it's $145 million. If he goes somewhere else, it's $108 million. So you're going to make almost the same amount leaving in 2016 as you would staying in 2015. So when you have that flexibility to draw that max offer from any team in the league and practically make the same amount staying in Cleveland, you know, that's a lot of power. yeah, the injuries are a little scary, and it's not 100% that that risk would pay off, but I would take it. What would you do?
Yeah, it's tough. I think I ultimately would do that because you still have the protection of that second-year player option. I mean, maybe you might even go for a two-year contract with a third-year player option. So then, you know, if he's, what, 26 now, you get back on the market when you're 28, the cap has still gone up, and then you can lock in another five-year deal for age 28 to age 33. So maybe that's a good way to split the difference between the amount of guaranteed money you're getting in case of injury versus ability to still get more later on. And also, I mean, there's going to be so many people, free agents, in 2016. Maybe you say we're better off being a free agent in 2017. This is my problem, though, with the doing the 1 year, the shorter contract. And that is, what if he has another year like this year?
Yeah. Although this, you know what, honestly, this year wasn't, he was so underrated this year when I was looking through, like, my All-NBA team. I mean, I had him in consideration for a forward spot.
Didn't even make the All-Star team this year.
No.
In the East.
No. I mean, I thought he had an underrated year. He was very good. He wasn't as good as he was previous years, and he wasn't as good as people hoped he'd be next to LeBron and Kyrie. But I still thought, like, everything went wrong, and I still thought he was very good.
So, I mean, do you think, you may think that. Do you think that everyone else, if he has the same year again, is going to say he's still a max guy, especially at this new higher max now?
But,
or are they going to say, look, maybe he's not the same guy anymore, or maybe what he was in Minnesota wasn't that good to begin with, if this is kind of what he's going to be on a championship-level team? I mean, and I don't think he will. If they keep playing the same way, you know, they don't move the ball more, he's not going to be – he's going to have – pretty much the same numbers I would expect next year, maybe a little better rebounding. He did have this back issue this year.
But it only takes one team. Like, the consensus might not be, but I do think it's not 100% safe, but fairly safe out of 30 teams. And keep in mind,
yeah,
everybody's going to have cap room.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess, you know, there's also the issue with the shoulder. You know, who knows how bad that's going to be. He's barely even going to be ready for training camp. I mean, there's a lot of things. He's been oft injured in his career. It's a tough guy. It's tougher than you think. I think I ultimately agree with you, but there are some very good reasons to just lock in now. I mean, another one might just be that just he's sick of all the rumors and trades and stuff like that as well. So that's but then, you know, the other option is, hey, I could be a free agent at the end of the year. Maybe you can involve me a little more than you have previously when it was just LeBron and Kyrie pounding the ball all the time.
Right. That's, all right. That, well, yeah. Well, the other thing, like, we haven't really mentioned is, like, how happy is he in Cleveland? It's not the biggest market. He's the third banana. LeBron, and he had all these strange interactions, passive aggressive stuff at times. It was really weird at times. You know, maybe he loves it. I don't know, but maybe this just isn't what he wants or isn't sure what he wants, and that should factor into how much flexibility he wants to give himself.
Look, Dan, we're done talking about Cleveland. Stop trying to fit out. Fit in. We're gonna start talking about the Hawks now, okay? So, just it's enough. You need to be more of a team player. We're already at like the 45-minute mark here. Enough, Cleveland.
Done with Cleveland. I'm with you now. I'm fit. I've got my Cleveland hat on in the hospital bed. I'm on board with whatever you want to do.
Atlanta hat on. We're going to Atlanta now.
It's
okay.
Changed.
All right. So the Hawks have a really, really weird situation because why don't you explain to people what the situation is with Millsap and with Damari Carroll, guys that they've only had for 2 years and therefore only have early bird rights on.
So the Hawks seemingly very smartly a couple years ago locked up Paul Millsap and Damari Carroll with short-term deals. They didn't commit a lot of long-term money to them. They maintained their flexibility. The only problem is Carroll and Millsap have been great. They've both really exceeded these contracts. They're in line to get more money, regardless of whether the cap was going to be shooting up a year from now. The fact that it's shooting up lets every team know this is the time to spend. This is when you get big contracts, when you lock them in, and they'll look like bargains in a couple years. So the market's going to be great for those guys. The problem is that the Hawks do not have their full bird rights. They have early bird rights. And that limits how much they can go over the cap to re-sign them. They're not going to be able to go over the cap the full amount. With Millsap, it's going to be 175 or 107.5. Is that right? Or is it 100?
No, it's 175%.
175% of his last salary. So he could start up to 16.625 million. Carroll is going to be 104.5% of the average salary from last year. So that's going to be about 5.9 million starting. That's definitely not going to be enough. So to get these guys, at least with Carroll, you're definitely going to have to use cap space. With Millsap, you might have to use cap space.
Yeah, so, and that's a really good way to explain it. And so the problem is then that if both Millsap and Carroll want to use cap space, then you're kind of in trouble. Because Millsap has a cap hold of about $12 million. And we've talked about what a cap hold is. That's basically a placeholder for what their next salary might be. It goes away when you re-sign them. But basically, he'll probably sign for over that cap hold, but you're allowed to just count him for that number until you actually re-sign him. So that actually works to their benefit a little bit if he's willing to start with the $16.6 million in the first year of his contract. If he requires more than that, then you're in trouble because now you have to re-sign him, and then that cuts into what you can use on Carroll. But let's say he's willing to do the $16.6 million, right? Now you're sticking with it. You can say, all right, we'll sign you to that, but just hold off for a second. Wait until we're done with that. You stick with your cap hold of around $12 million. That gives us now room to re-sign Carroll, and they would have about $11.3 million in room to sign Carroll, and that's sort of what's being talked about as where his range is going to be. There was a Kevin Arnovitz story saying the Hawks are kind of bracing for a four-year offer or they'd have to pay about 4 years, $50 million to bring him back. That's kind of rough for him in some ways if you're a team because he's 29. You know, is he going to be worth that much when he's 33? You know, maybe the cap's going up, but, you know, how much is his performance going to decline between now and then? So that's kind of tough. They may decide they want to pay that. That should be just enough room to pay something like that. But then now that you use cap space, all you can do is re-sign Millsap, and then you have the $2.8 million room exception, and that's kind of your summer unless you make some trades.
Right, and you lose Hero Antich, probably. Maybe you can get him for the room exception. Maybe you can leave his cap hold on the books. But you're playing with such tight margins. Just to get back Carroll and Millsap, you're probably going to lose somebody like Antich, who's a nice piece, who's definitely a helpful contributor to this team.
What do you think this team needs?
Honestly, I think their number one priority should be to keep Carroll and Millsap. They need to stay together. It's so hard to build a winning team that once you do it, I think teams need to go to greater lengths to keep it together. Maybe another season of continuity, they can make the next step. I don't think they will. So that's the caveat. I think if they stay together, I don't think they're as good as they were this year. I think they take a slight step back, but they might be better. I think that's their best path to being better, is to keep this main group together.
Yeah, it is tough, right? Because Millsap had a career year. Carroll had a career year. Kyle Korver had a career year.
Jeff Teague.
I mean, Teague is young enough that he might take another step to improve. But Carroll probably won't be as good next year. Millsap probably won't be as good next year. You know, he's going to be 30, and Carroll is 29. So, and then Korver is going to be 34, and he's coming off a really bad ankle surgery he's going to have to rehab all summer on. He's not going to be able to practice his shooting. So, you know, it's hard to, and then this is also a team that overachieved. Their point differential is, I think, the worst of any 60-win team ever, just about, if not the worst, one of the worst. So when you look at that and the fact that these guys are probably going to be worse next year, you're probably looking, you know, I would project that they're going to win low 50s at best next year, even if they bring everyone back. So, you know, maybe that's good. Maybe they're happy with that. Maybe they think that the continuity can improve. But I think this team definitely needs someone who can block some shots and, you know, hit the defensive glass. They got killed in the defensive glass by Cleveland, and that's not a problem that's going to go away. And they could use, ironically enough, a Lou Williams type of bench guy that they traded away. and maybe another wing guy. We don't know what's going to happen with Tabo. You know, there's been some disturbing reports that he may struggle to come back from that terrible injury he suffered at the hands of the police. So now, you know, they got a lot of needs, and if they just bring the band back together, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think there's that great of an option, but maybe you say, all right, if these guys, our plan has been to maintain flexibility and trust our coaching staff. If Millsap really wants this much, if Carroll really wants this much over this many years, you know, we'll see if we can do a little better with that cap space. The problem is, I don't think they can.
Right, exactly. I don't think they can. And part of the, I guess, protection for going the keep the band together route is they're going to get flexibility in a year. Like, they have to weather the storm or figure out their way through it. But in a year, the cap goes up, and they'll get some flexibility back. And if these guys continue to play well, maybe even at a 50-game pace, they'll be tradable. Like, everybody's in love with these players right now. I don't think that's going to disappear overnight.
Yeah, and also, I should say, too, if they need a little more space for Millsap or they need a little more space for Carroll, they could maybe move on from someone like Bazemore, who makes $2 million, Shelvin Mack, $2.4 million, Mike Scott, $3 million, Cephalosha, $4 million. So I think that those, that wouldn't necessarily be an issue. They also even could consider trading that first round pick that they have to pick up another score. That's the 15th pick. So that's another option to them as well. I shouldn't make it sound like they don't have options at all. But so let me ask you this. I mean, do you think that Damari Carroll would be worth a 4-year, $50 million contract if that's what it ends up being?
Do I think he would be worth it? If I had to guess, no. If I were the Hawks, would I rather pay that than lose him and be in this predicament where you still don't have a ton of cap space, you still might not get a viable replacement? I think I'd rather pay that than lose him.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I think the first couple of years of that, he'll probably be worth it, right? Like, I did a piece this year on who would I be picking for the East All-Star team if I needed to make a real team that actually fit together. And the list of, like, good 3-and-D guys in the East is pretty much non-existent. Like, there's Chris Middleton, there's him. Maybe if you want to count Jimmy Butler as a 3-and-D guy, but he's probably, you know, more of a scorer at this point, you know, really more of a star. And then who is it, Shumpert? I mean, there's really just not very many of those guys. So he's more valuable than you think he is, at least right now. The problem is just, you know, if he were 27, I'd be all about paying him that contract. It's just, you know, the back end may not be too good. But as we keep saying, the cap's going up. You know, if he's making $12 million, you know, that's basically just kind of like starter money, lower-end starter money. So not the end of the world, perhaps. But, I mean, I think he'll probably degrade into kind of being a bench guy in the last 2 years of that contract.
He's a little tough to figure out in that he's gotten better. And, you know, even as he's getting into his mid and headed toward his late 20s, and he continues to progress. And maybe we're just fooled a little bit thinking he can keep doing that, or maybe he's somebody who's just a little bit of a late bloomer and is really starting to figure out what he can do.
Yeah, I mean, and let's not forget, he was their best player in the playoffs for the first probably 10 games or so, you know, and then he suffered that knee injury and he wasn't really any good against Cleveland. But, I mean, that was pretty badass that he played on that, frankly, when you consider, you know, that he hasn't really made much in his career and he's in line for this huge payday now. So, you know, that's the type of player that he is. He's, you know, a great character guy. So I think that they would be wise to keep him through the period when he will shave off his dreadlocks, which is coming. It is coming.
Do you think his strong play in the playoffs was like a little bit of a glimmer that there's even more to him than he showed throughout the season? Or do you think that was mostly a small sample?
I think so. I mean, he wasn't really like blowing by guys one-on-one. I mean, he was opportunistic scoring cuts, shot the ball a little better than normal. And when you consider that too versus the aging curve, I mean, Atlanta has done an amazing job with their system and their player development, getting these guys to be better. But I mean, history has shown that you really peak, you know, when you're between 25 and 27. And so, you know, with him being 29, I think you have to expect reasonably that he'll, you know, begin to a gentle decline here.
Yeah, I'm with you, but I just think, you know, he'll be good for a couple more years. I don't think there's anything wrong with winning 50 games in a playoff series.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think they're going to have people more excited now. Also, like, the new ownership, you'll recall, is coming in. They don't want the first thing to be that has happened with the new owner is, oh yeah, we just lost two dudes who started on this 60-win team. You know, that's another component of this as well. So I think as long as Millsap is willing to slot in at that $16.6 million to start, then, you know, it gets to be pretty reasonable. Now, the most they can offer him is 4 years. I mean, are you comfortable offering him a four-year contract with maximum raises starting at $16.6 million?
I am, definitely. I think the bigger question, and, well, you tell me if you are too, but I think the bigger question is, would he be comfortable taking that? Because he could get more elsewhere. He could start at, was it 19?
Yeah, you could start right about 19. So, yeah, I would think that he would be. And he had a comment that, you know, their continuity and their chemistry would be important to him. And I think also when you consider that they'll be offering him 4 years and that the maximum raises can help make up for, in some respects, the fact that he wouldn't be starting necessarily quite as high, I think that that would get it done for him. But, you know, maybe it won't. And if it doesn't, then it really complicates things to keep Carroll. I mean, at least now you can go to him and say, look, like, we got to pay Demare. You know, we're not going to have room for you. You've got this cap hold, and, you know, we really need you to stay within these limits, or we're not going to be able to stay under the cap and keep Carroll. You know, that's a much more legitimate argument than Mickey Arison having to pay a lot more luxury tax as far as taking a discount, you know?
Right. And, you know, I sort of criticized it when the reports first came out that Budenholzer was going to become the permanent president. I don't know if he's done enough to really deserve that, but maybe that's the benefit of where this team is now. You need to have that trust. You need these players on board with the plan of keeping it together, because there does have to be some cooperation.
Yeah, and you also would have to imagine that the coach who got so much out of these guys is going to be very on board with trying to bring everyone back. And, you know, I mean, Wes Wilcox is also going to be the GM. I'm sure he's a real smart guy. He'll have a big voice in this as well. He's been part of the regime that was able to maintain flexibility and get these guys in to begin with. But, you know, I think that with Bud being where the buck stops, that, yeah, he would err on the side of keeping these guys together as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think ultimately that's what I would expect to see happen, is Millsap signing, starting with the 16.6, and then they give pretty much most of the rest of that space to Carroll, use the room exception, draft somebody with their 15th pick, and run it back.
Yeah, I'm with you. But if I were Millsap, I would be looking hard at teams like the Knicks, Lakers, Celtics, maybe even Raptors if they want to go a different direction, Blazers, if LaMarcus Aldridge leaves. I'd be trying to have that max offer in my back pocket to tell the Hawks, like, you know, you got to do this. You know, you can't screw around with Carroll and expect me to get less or I'm gone.
Yeah, maybe that's so. But on the other hand, I don't see anywhere else he could go where he could necessarily win. I mean, the only other option maybe would be San Antonio. Could be a possibility, depending on what happens with Duncan and Manu, but that's a long shot, you know, only if they were to either not come back or come back at an incredibly low number would he be able to go there. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure where else he could end up that would give him as much of a chance to win. And when you consider what Atlanta has done for his career as well and how close all those guys are, I think that, you know, hopefully that would end up worth it for him, but we'll see.
Well, I think there's a risk that Carroll gets, like, even beyond the numbers we're talking about, which are pretty substantial. It just takes one team to make a really big offer for him, and I guess maybe at that point Millsap could get more from Atlanta because they don't need to save that money for Carroll, but maybe that would increase his interest to look around a little bit if Carroll's not coming back.
Oh, man, they desperately need Carroll, though. They really, like, he's the only one on that team who can guard anybody on the perimeter and still make a shot, you know? I mean, and so it's they'd be in big trouble without him, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, but, you know, you could see another team go at Carroll with something maybe even close to the max for less years. I think that paying that to him would be better than maybe than some of these other guys, you know, start do a 3-year deal with him for $15 million or something like that, and overpay to be sure, but I think that's a better use of your free agency money than some of these other guys because he fits in so well for a team that has hopes of maybe doing something. I think he would be great, for example, in Dallas. But You know, all right, we're probably getting a little bit too far afield. Anything else you wanted to say about this Hawks situation before we wrap up?
No, I think they should look. The only thing I'd say is they should, you know, look at potential other wing options, Marco Bellinelli or Mike Dunleavy, or, you know, they need to keep this in mind in case Carroll gets that really big contract and it doesn't work out in Atlanta. But I do think their best move and most likely move is bringing both guys back.
Yeah, and I do think also they would be wise to not mess around, you know, offer these guys their best offer immediately.
Yes.
And know whether they're going to take it, because you have to have kind of that trust there. Get Carroll in the fold, get Millsap in the fold, or know if it's not going to happen with them, then, you know, pivot to plan B immediately. And, you know, plan B is going to be pretty rough for them. Then they're just kind of back in the scrum with all these other teams with space. So, all right, I think that's about it then. Thanks so much for coming on. Your cap expertise is always appreciated, and hopefully we didn't screw anything up with your help like I did last time. So thanks for coming on, Dan. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. For those who don't know, you can follow Dan at Dan Feldman NBA. He will respond to your Twitter queries while hanging out at the Bizarro Coffee Shop, Reggie's, from Seinfeld. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Duncan NBA. Please subscribe on iTunes if you like this. We're going to be going through doing some more draft stuff over the next week. Probably going to try and get to every team with a pretty similar breakdown to what we do. We've gotten through about a third of them already, and there's still plenty of really other interesting teams out there as well. So please give us a rating on iTunes. That's always appreciated as well. And we'll talk to you all again tomorrow night. Thank you very much.